This is the voice of contract management, presented by the law firm of Kroll & Mooring, exclusively for NCMA. Stay up to date on all things contract management, 5 minutes at a time. Our team at Kroll & Mooring presents these podcasts to keep you up to speed on a bi-monthly basis. We will cover everything from regulatory updates to crucial changes that impact the government contracting community. Thanks so much for joining us today. We have three topics to cover. First, an important update on the DEI executive order we discussed in our last episode. Second, the CBER program is back with Congress enacting and President Trump signing the reauthorization. Third is an update on the Pentagon's budget request. Let's start with the DEI clause and a couple of updates there. So as a reminder, on March 26th, President Trump issued Executive Order 14398 titled Addressing DEI Discrimination by Federal Contractors. That EO declared DEI activities quote-unquote unethical and often illegal, and it required a new mandatory contract clause for federal contracts and subcontracts, and it directed the FAR Council to issue an implementing class deviation. So now as we sit here today, the FAR Council has issued a memo and class deviation providing implementation guidance for that executive order. The deviation establishes a new contract clause, FAR 52222-90, titled Addressing DEI Discrimination by Federal Contractors. Under the new clause, contractors must agree to several key obligations. First, contractors must agree not to engage in any racially discriminatory DEI activities. That's the phrase in the clause. And that clause defines that phrase as disparate treatment based on race or ethnicity in recruitment, employment, such as hiring, promotions, contracting, including vendor agreements, program participation, or the allocation or deployment of an entity's resources. Second, contractors must agree to furnish all information and reports, including access to books, records, and accounts, as required by the contracting officer for purposes of ascertaining compliance. Third, contractors must report any subcontractors' known or reasonably knowable conduct that may violate the clause to the contracting officer and take remedial actions as directed by the CO. And fourth, contractors must inform the contracting officer if a subcontractor puts at issue in any way the validity of the clause. So Yuan, what can you tell us about timing of the rollout for the clause?
Yeah, thanks, Peter. In terms of applicability, agencies need to insert FAR 52222-90 into all new solicitations and resulting contracts, as well as current contracts over the micro-purchase threshold, including those for commercial products and services, if the place of performance is in the United States. Open solicitations must also be amended to incorporate the clause, and importantly, the clause needs to be flowed down to subcontracts at any tier, including those for commercial products and services. Now, if a contractor refuses a bilateral modification to incorporate the clause, the CO is to consider whether the unmodified contract still meets agency needs or if it should be terminated for convenience. Now, we also want to flag the deviation's explicit language on enforcement consequences for noncompliance. The clause states that contractors must recognize that compliance with the clause is material for the government's payment decisions, which reinforces the FCA implications we discussed previously. In addition, failure to comply with the clause now is an enumerated cause for suspension and debarment as well. Now, shifting gears, let's move to our second topic, the return of the CBER and SDTR programs. On April 13th, President Trump signed the Small Business Innovation and Economic Security Act of 2026, extending the CBER and SDTR programs through September 30th of 2031. Prior authorization for the programs expired back on September 30th of last year, so we had a six-month gap where agencies could not issue new awards. The act also allows agencies with remaining CBER SDTR funding at the end of FY26 to carry those funds into FY27. The act also introduces several notable changes we want to flag today. First, it creates a new category of Phase 2 funding called Strategic Breakthrough Awards for agencies with annual cyber expenditures exceeding $100 million. Individual awards can reach up to $30 million with a maximum performance period of 48 months. And contractors must hold a prior Phase 1 or Phase 2 award and secure matching funds equal to 100% of the award amount. And for DOW awards, there are additional requirements, including technology maturity thresholds and a minimum of 20% of matching funds from non-CIPR DOW sources. Second, the Act significantly expands national security and supply chain screening practices. Agencies must now examine whether applicants or their key personnel have foreign affiliations, investment ties, technology licensing arrangements, or other business relationships with parties in countries of concern. And entities appearing on designated federal watch lists, like the Section 889 prohibition list and the 1260H list, are now excluded from participation. Third, beginning in FY27, agencies will set their own limits on the number of proposals a company can submit, which is intended to address the concerns about so-called cyber mills. And fourth, the Act directs SBA to advocate for the maximum use of Phase 3 awards and requires agencies to develop simplified, standardized procedures and model contracts across all phases. Now let's turn to our third and final topic. Peter, back to you.
Great. Thank you so much. We want to talk briefly about the Department of War's 2027 mandatory budget request. This gives a really good indication of how the department is thinking about the industrial base, priorities, things like that. What's striking about the budget is where the mandatory dollars are meant to go. It reflects a substantial push to scale industrial capacity and emerging technologies at speed and at scale. It also really underscores how the department is thinking about novel uses of some of these authorities and mechanisms. So let me just call out a few things that jumped out to us. The defense industrial base section alone accounts for $113 billion. That includes $48 billion for critical minerals, rare earths, microelectronics, batteries, all aimed at reducing reliance on foreign sources. There's also almost $24 billion for Defense Production Act purchases and other uses to expand domestic production of kinetic weapons, casting forgings, microelectronics, and other areas of priority for the department. The Office of Strategic Capital is seeking $20 billion in credit subsidy to back a $200 billion lending authority. And there's a new National Security Investment Fund seeking $1 billion in seed capital designed to be self-sustaining through returns on investments in dual-use technologies. We're also seeing almost $50 billion in munitions driven by the Munitions Acceleration Council. That covers 12 legacy systems, emerging capabilities, with the department using framework agreements, private capital partnerships to lock in pricing and accelerate production. We also see over $100 billion for next generation technology and autonomy and a focus on drones and AI. So it just is a really good sense of how the Pentagon is thinking about priorities, where it's looking at placing its capital. Obviously, there's a lot of steps between now and when the budget is actually released, but we thought it was important and quite useful to share those data points with our listeners. So those are our three topics for today. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time.
We will close this edition out. Thanks for listening to the Voice of Contract Management, brought to you by Kroll & Mooring exclusively for NCMA. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to discuss all things government contracting. In the meantime, explore your learning opportunities at www.ncmahq.org/coursecatalog.